12. Agitprop. Brothers in Suspicion. Serpent and Moon. Slipping across the page like a snake, the nib of Ignace Carcassi's pen moved as though it had a mind of its own. For all the conscious thought he was putting into the words, it might as well have. The muse was well and truly upon him, his stream of consciousness flowing into a river of blood as he retold the diabolical events on the embarkation deck. The meter played in his head like a symphony, every stanza of every canto slipping into place as if there could be no other possible arrangement of verse. Even in his heyday of ocean poems or reflections and odes, he had not felt this inspired. In fact, now that he looked back on them, he hated them for their frippery, their unconscionable navel-gazing and irrelevance to the galaxy at large. These words, these thoughts that now poured from him, this was what mattered, and he cursed that it had taken him this long to discover it. The truth was what mattered. Captain Loken had told him as much, but he hadn't heard him, not really. The verses he'd written since Loken had begun his sponsorship of him were paltry things, unworthy of the man who had won the Ethiopic laureate. But that was changing now. After the bloodbath on the embarkation deck, he'd returned to his quarters, grabbed a bottle of Terran wine, and made his way to the observation deck. Finding it thronged with wailing lunatics, he'd repaired to the retreat, knowing that it would be empty. The words had poured out of him in a flood of righteous indignation, his metaphors bold and his lyric unflinching from the awful brutality he witnessed. He'd already used up 3 pages of The Bondsman, his fingers blotted with ink and his poet's soul on fire.
"Everything I've ever done before this was prologue," he whispered as he wrote.
Carcassi paused in his work as he pondered the dilemma. The truth was useless if no one could hear it. The facilities set aside for the remembrancers included a press work where they could submit their work for large-scale circulation. It was common knowledge that much of what passed through it was vetted and censored, and so few made use of it. Carcassi certainly couldn't, considering the content of his new poetry. A slow smile spread across his jowly features, and he reached into the pocket of his robes and pulled out a crumpled sheet of paper. One of Euphrates Keeler's Lectitio Divinitatis pamphlets, and spread it out flat on the table before him with the heel of his palm. The ink was smeared and the paper reeked of ammonia, clearly the work of a cheap mechanical bulk printer of some kind. If Euphrates could get the use of one, then so could he. Loken permitted Tybalt Marr to torch the body of Eugen Tember before they left the bridge. His fellow captain, streaked with gore and filth, played the burning breath of a flame unit over the monstrous corpse until nothing but ash and bone remained. It was small satisfaction for the death of a brother, not nearly enough, but it would have to do. Leaving behind the smouldering remains, they retraced their footsteps back through the glory of Terra. The light was fading on Davin's moon by the time they reached the outside, the planet above a pale yellow orb hanging low in the dusky sky. Loken carried the anathema in its gleaming wooden casket, and his warriors followed him from the wreck without any words spoken. A great rumbling vibration gripped the moon as a trio of towering columns of light and smoke climbed towards the heavens from the Imperial deployment zone, where this whole misadventure had started. Loken watched the incredible spectacle of the war machines of the Legio Mortis returning to their armored berths in orbit, and silently thanked their crews for their aid in the fight against the dead things. Soon, all that was visible of the Titan's carriers was a diffuse glow on the horizon, and only the lap of water and the low growling of the waiting Thunderhawk's engines disturbed the silence. The desolate mudflats were empty for kilometers around, and as Loken made his way down the slope of rubble, he felt like the loneliest man in the galaxy. Some kilometers away, he could see specks of blue light following the Titan carriers as army transports ferried the last remaining soldiers back to their bulk transporters.
"We'll soon be done here, eh?"
said Torgadden.
"I suppose," agreed Loken. "The sooner the better."
"How do you suppose that thing got here?"
Loken didn't have to ask what his brother meant, and shook his head, unwilling to share his suspicions with Torgadden yet. As much as he loved him, Tarik had a big mouth, and Loken didn't want to put his quarry to flight.
"I don't know, Tarik," said Loken,
as they reached the ground and made their way towards the Thunderhawk's lowered assault ramp.
I don't think we'll ever know. Come on, Garvey. It's me, laughed O'Gadden. You're so straight up and down, and that makes you a really terrible liar. I know you've got some idea of what happened. So, come on, spill it.
I can't, Tarek. I'm sorry, said Logan.
Not yet, anyway. Trust me. I know what I'm doing.
Do you really?
I'm not sure, admitted Logan. I think so. Throne, I wish the War Master were here to ask.
Well, he's not, stated Dorgadden. So you're stuck with me.
Logan stepped onto the ramp, grateful to be off the marshy surface of the moon, and turned to face Dorgadden.
You're right, I should tell you. And I will. Soon. I just need to figure some things out first.
Look, I'm not stupid, Garvey, said Dorgadden,
leaning in close so that none of the others could hear.
I know the only way this thing could have got here is if someone in the expedition brought it. It had to have been here before we arrived. That means there was only one person who was with us on Zenobia and who could have got here before we did. You know who I'm talking about.
I know who you're talking about, agreed Logan,
pulling Torgadden aside as the rest of the warriors embarked upon the Thunderhawk.
What I can't figure out is why. Why go to all the trouble of stealing this thing and then bringing it here?
I'm going to break that son of a bitch in two if he had something to do with what's happened to the War Master, snarled Torgadden. The Legion will have his hide.
No, hissed Logan. Not yet. Not until we find out what this is all about, and if anyone else is involved. I just can't believe that someone would dare try and move against the War Master.
Is that what you think is happening? A coup? You think that one of the other Primarchs is making a play for the role of War Master?
I don't know. It all sounds too far-fetched. It sounds like something from one of Sindarin's books.
Neither man said anything. The idea that one of the Eternal Brotherhood of Primarchs might be attempting to usurp Horus was incredible, outrageous, and unthinkable. Wasn't it? Hey, called Vipers from inside the Thunderhawk. What are you two conspirators plotting?
Nothing, said Logan guiltily. We were just talking.
Well, finish up. We need to go. Now.
Why? What is it?
Asked Logan as he climbed aboard. The War Master, said Vipers. They're taking him to Davin. The Thunderhawk was in the air moments later, lifting off in a spray of muddy water and a flare of blue-hot jet fire. The gunship circled the massive wreck, gaining altitude and speed as it turned towards the sky. The pilot firewalled the engines, and the gunship roared up into the darkness. The great red orb of the sun was dipping below the horizon, and hot, dry winds rising from the plains below made it a bumpy ride as they re-entered Darwin's atmosphere. The continental mass swelled through the armored glass of the cockpit, dusty and brown and dry. Logan sat up front in the cockpit with the pilots and watched the avionics panel as the red blip that represented the location of the War Master's Stormbird drew ever closer. Far below them, he could see the glittering lights of the Imperial deployment zone where they had first made planetfall on Davin, a wide circle of arc lights, makeshift landing platforms, and defensive positions. The pilot brought them in at a steep angle, speed more important to Logan than any notion of safe flight, and they streaked past scores of other landing craft on their way to the surface.
Why so many?
Wondered Logan, as their flight leveled out and they shot past the wide circle of light, seeing soldiers and servitors toiling to expedite the approach of so many landing craft. No idea, said the pilot, but there's hundreds of them coming down from the fleet. Looks like a lot of people want to see Davin. Logan didn't reply. But the sight of so many landing craft en route to Davin was yet another piece of the puzzle that he didn't understand. The Vox networks were jammed with insane chatter, weeping voices and groups claiming that the end was coming, while yet others gave thanks to the Divine Emperor that his chosen champion would soon rise from his deathbed. None of it made any sense. He tried to make contact with the Mournival, but no one was answering, and a terrible foreboding filled him when he couldn't even reach Malaghurst on the vengeful spirit. Their flight soon carried them beyond the Imperial position, and Logan saw a ribbon of light stretching north from the landing zone. A host of pinpricks of light pierced the darkness, and Loken ordered the pilot to fly lower and reduce speed. A long column of vehicles, tanks, supply trucks, transporter flatbeds, and even some civilian traffic, drove along the dusty hardpan, each one swamped with people, and all heading to the mountain as fast as their engines could carry them. The Thunderhawk powered on through the fading light of day, soon losing sight of the column of vehicles that was heading in the same direction.
"How long until we reach the Warmaster's position?" he asked.
"At current speed, maybe 10 minutes or so," answered the pilot. Loken tried to collect his thoughts, but they had long since derailed in the midst of all this madness. Ever since leaving the Interrex, his mind had been a whirlpool, sucking in every random thought and spitting it out with barbs of suspicion. Could it be that he was still suffering the after-effects of what had happened to Jubal? Might the power, unlocked beneath the Whisperheads, be tainting him so that he jumped at shadows where none existed? He might have been able to believe that, but for the presence of the Anathame, and his certainty that First Chaplain Erebus had lied to him on the voyage to Davin. Carcassi had said that Erebus wanted Horus to come to Davin's moon, and his undoubted complicity in the theft of the Anathame could lead to only one conclusion. Erebus had wanted Horus to be killed here. That didn't make any sense either. Why go to such convoluted lengths just to kill the Warmaster? Surely there had to be more to it than that. Facts were slowly accumulating, but none of them fit, and still he had no idea why any of this was happening, only that it was, and that it was by the artifice of human design. Whatever was going on, he would uncover the conspiracy and make those involved pay with their lives. "We're coming up on the Warmaster's Stormbird," called the pilot. Loken shook himself from his venomous reverie. He hadn't been aware of time passing, but immediately turned his attention to what lay beyond the armored glass of the cockpit. Tall mountain peaks surrounded them, jagged cliffs of red stone, veined with gleaming strata of gold and quartz. They followed the course of an ancient causeway along the valley, its flagstones split and cracked with the passing of the centuries. Statues of long-dead kings lined the processional way, and toppled columns littered this forgotten highway like fallen guardians. Shadows plumbed the depths of the valley along which they flew, and in a gap ahead he could see a reflected glow in the brazen sky. The pilot dropped their speed, and the gunship flew through the gap into a colossal crater, gouged from the landscape, like an enormous flat-bottomed basin. The sheer sides of the crater soared above them, its diameter thousands of meters across. A huge stone building stood at its center, carved from the same rock as the mountains and bathed in the light of 1,000 flaming torches. The Thunderhawk circled the structure, and Loken saw that it was a giant octagonal building, each corner shaped like the bastion of a fortress. 8 towers surrounded a wide dome at its center, and flames burned from their tops. Loken could see the Warmaster's Stormbird below them, a multitude of torchbearers surrounding it, hundreds, maybe even thousands of people. A clear path stretched from the Stormbird towards the cyclopean archway that led into the building, and Loken saw the unmistakable form of the Warmaster being borne by the sons of Horus towards it.
"Take us down, now!" shouted Loken.
He rose, made his way back to the crew compartment, and snatched his bolter from the rack.
"What's up?" asked Vipers. "Trouble?"
"Could be," said Loken, turning to address all the warriors aboard the gunship. "Once we disembark, take your lead from me."
His warriors had efficiently prepped for a combat disembarkation, and Loken felt the motion of the Thunderhawk change as it slowed and came into land. The internal light changed from red to green, and the craft slammed hard into the ground. The assault ramp dropped, and Loken led the way out, marching confidently towards the building. Night had fallen, but the air was hot, and the sour fragrances of bitter blossoms filled the air with a beguiling, aromatic scent. He led his men onwards at a quick march. Many of the torchbearers turned quizzically towards them, and Loken now saw that these were the indigenous inhabitants of Davin. The Davinites were more wiry than most mortal men, tall and hirsute with thin limbs, and elaborate topknots worn in a style similar to Abaddon's. They wore long capes of shimmering patterned scales, banded armor of the same lacquered scales, and most were armed with crossbelts of daggers and primitive-looking black powder pistols. They parted before the advance of the Astartes, heads bowed in supplication, and it forcibly struck Loken just how close to deviancy these creatures appeared to be. He hadn't paid much attention to the Davanites the first time he'd landed. He was just a squad captain more concerned with obeying orders and completing the tasks assigned to him than paying attention to the locals. Even this time, his attention had been elsewhere, and the almost bestial appearance of the Davanites had more or less slipped past his notice. Surrounded by hundreds of the planet's inhabitants, their divergence from the human genome was unmistakable, and Loken wondered how they had avoided extermination 6 decades ago, especially since it had been the word-bearers who had made first contact with Davin, a legion not noted for its tolerance of anything beyond the norm. Loken was reminded of Abaddon's furious argument with the Warmaster over the question of the Interrex, and of how the first captain had demanded that they make war upon them for their tolerance of Xenos breeds. If anything, Davin was far more of a textbook case for war, but somehow that hadn't happened. The Davinites were clearly of human gene stock, but this offshoot of humanity had diverged into a species almost all of its own. The wide spacing of their features, the dark eyes without pupils, and the excessive, almost simian volume of thick hair on their faces and arms put Loken more in the mind of the stable-bred mutants some regiments of the Imperial Army employed. They were crude creatures, with the intelligence to swing a sword or fire a clumsy rifle, but not much else. Loken did not approve of the practice, and though the inhabitants of Davin were clearly possessed of a greater level of intelligence than such beasts, their appearance did not reassure him as to what was going on. He put the Davinites from his mind as he approached a massive set of steps carved into the rock and lined with statues of coiling serpents and flaming braziers. 3 narrow channels filled with rushing water divided the stairs, one to either side and one down the center. The Warmaster and his bearers were out of sight on the next level, and Loken led his warriors up the processional stairs, taking them 3 at a time as he heard a monstrous grinding of stone up ahead. The image of vast monolithic doors appeared unbidden in his mind, and he said, "We have to hurry." Loken neared the top of the steps, the flickering coal braziers casting a ruddy glow over the statues that glinted from the serpent scales and quartz chip eyes. The last rays of the dying sun caught the twisting snakes carved around the pillars, making them seem alive, as if slowly descending to the steps. The effect was unsettling, and Loken opened his suit link again, saying, "Abaddon, Aximand, can either of you hear me? Respond!" His earpiece hissed with static, but his hails received no answers, and he picked up the pace. He reached the top of the steps at last, and emerged onto a moonlit esplanade of yet more serpentine statues atop pillars that lined a narrowing roadway leading towards a giant arched gateway in the face of the massive edifice. Wide gates of carved and beaten bronze with a glistening, spiraled surface rumbled as they swung closed, and Loken felt his skin crawl at the sight of that dread portal, its yawning darkness rich with the promise of ancient, primal power. He could see a group of Astartes warriors standing before it, watching as the monstrous gate shut. Loken could see no sign of the Warmaster.
"Pick up the pace. Battle march," he ordered,
and began the loping, ground-eating stride that the Astartes adopted when there was no vehicle support. Marching at this speed was sustainable over huge distances and still allowed a warrior to fight at the end of it. Loken prayed that he wouldn't be required to fight at the end of this march. As he drew closer to the gates, he saw that, far from being etched with meaningless spirals, each was carved with all manner of images and scenes. Looping serpents twisted from one leaf to another. Others circled and swallowed their tails, and yet more were depicted intertwined as though mating. Only when the gate slammed shut with a thunderous boom of metal did he see the full image. Unlike the commander, Loken was no student of art. Nevertheless, he was awed by the full impact of the images worked onto the sealed gateway. Central to its imagery was a great tree with spreading branches, hanging with fruit of all description. Its 3 roots stretched out beyond the base of the gates and into a wide circular pool that fed the streams running the length of the esplanade, before cascading down the grand stairs. 2 snakes coiled around the tree, their heads entwined in the branches above, and Loken was struck by its similarity to the symbol borne upon the shoulder guards of the Legion Apothecaries. Seven warriors stood at the edge of the pool of water, before the massive gate. They were armored in the green of the sons of Horus, and Loken knew them all. Abaddon, Aximand, Targost, Sedire, Ecadon, Kyber, and Malachurst. None wore their helmets, and as they turned, he could see that each one had the same air of helpless desperation. He had walked into hell with these warriors time and time again, and seeing his brothers with such expressions on their faces drained him of his anger, leaving him hollow and heartbroken. He slowed his march as he came face to face with Aximand.
"What have you done?" he asked. "Oh, my brothers, what have you done?"
"What needed to be done?" said Abaddon,
when Aximand didn't answer. Loken ignored the first captain and said,
"Little Horus, tell me what you've done." "It is as Ezekiel said. We did what had to be done," said Aximand. "The Warmaster was dying, and Vadin couldn't save him. So we brought him to the Delphos."
"The Delphos?" asked Loken.
"It is the name of this place," said Aximand. "The Temple of the Serpent Lodge."
"Temple?" asked Togaden.
"Horus, you brought the Warmaster to a fane? Are you mad? The commander would never have agreed to this."
"Maybe not," replied Sirgar Targost, stepping forward to stand beside Abaddon. "But by the end, he couldn't even speak. He spoke to that damn Remembrancer woman for hours on end before he lost consciousness. We had to place him in a stasis field to keep him alive long enough to bring him here."
"Is Taric right?" asked Loken. "Is this a fane?"
"Fane? Temple? Delphos, House of Healing, call it what you will," shrugged Targost. "With the Warmaster on the threshold of death, neither religion nor its denial seems very significant any more. It is the only hope we have left. And what do we have to lose? If we do nothing, the Warmaster dies. At least this way he has a chance of life."
"And at what price will we buy his life?" demanded Loken. "By bringing him to a house of false gods? The Emperor tells us that civilization will only achieve perfection when the last stone of the last church falls upon the last priest. And this is where you bring the Warmaster. This goes against everything we have fought for these last two centuries. Don't you see that?"
"If the Emperor was here, he would do the same," said Targost, and Loken felt his collar rise to the surface at such hubris. He stepped threateningly close to Targost.
"You think you know the Emperor's will, Sirgar? Does being Lodge Master of a secret society give you the power to know such a thing?"
"Of course not," sneered Targost. "But I know he would want his son to live."
"By entrusting his life to these savages?"
"It is from these savages that our own quiet order comes," pointed out Targost.
"Yet another reason for me to distrust it, then,"
snapped Loken, turning from the Lodge Master and addressing Vipers and Torgadon.
"Come on, we're getting the Warmaster out of there."
"You can't," said
Malachurst, limping forward to join Abaddon, and Loken had the distinct impression that his brothers were forming a barrier between him and the gateway.
"What do you mean?"
"It is said that once the Delphos gate is shut, there is no way to open it save from the inside. A man in need of healing is carried inside and left to whatever the eternal spirits of deceased things decree for him. If it is his destiny to live, he may open the gate himself. If not, it opens in 9 days, and his remains are burned before being cast into the pool."
"So you've just left the Warmaster inside? For all the good that will do him, you might just as well have left him on the vengeful spirit. And eternal spirits of deceased things? What does that even mean? This is insane. Can't you see that?"
"Standing by and watching him die would have been insane," said Malachurst. "You judge us for acting out of love. Can't you see that?"
"No, Mal, I can't,"
replied Loken sadly.
"How did you ever think to bring him here anyway? Was it some secret knowledge your damned lodge is privy to?"
None of his brothers spoke, and as Loken searched their faces for answers, the truth of the matter was suddenly horribly clear to him.
"Erebus told you of this place, didn't he?"
"Yes," admitted Targost. "He knows of these lodges of old, and has seen the power of their healing houses. If the Warmaster lives, you will be thankful he spoke of it."
"Where is he?"
demanded Loken.
He will answer to me for this. He is not here, Garvey, said Aximand. This was for the sons of Horus to do. Then where is he now? Still on the vengeful spirit?
Aximand shrugged.
I suppose so. Why is it important to you? I believe you have all been deceived, my brothers, said Loken. Only the Emperor has the power to heal the Warmaster now. All else is falsehood and the domain of unclean corpse whisperers.
The Emperor is not here, said Targost bluntly. We take what aid we can.
What of you, Taric?
Put in Abaddon.
Will you turn from your Mournival brothers as Garvil does? Stand with us.
Garvey may be a starch ass, Ezekiel, but he's right, and I can't stand with you on this one. I'm sorry, said Togaden,
as he and Loken turned away from the gate.
You forget your Mournival oath,
cried Abaddon, as they marched away.
You swore to be true to the Mournival to the end of your lives. You will be oath-breakers.
The words of the first captain hit Loken with the force of a bolt-around, and he stopped in his tracks. Oath-breaker. The very idea was hideous. Aximand came after him, grabbing his arm and pointing towards the pool of water. The black water rippled with motion, and Loken could see the yellow crescent of Davin's moon wavering in its surface.
See, said Aximand. The moon shines upon the water, Loken. The crescent mark of the new moon. It was branded upon your helmet when we swore our Mournival oath. It is a good omen, my brother.
Omen,
spat Loken, shrugging off his touch.
Since when have we put our faith in omens, Horus?
The Mournival oath was pantomime, but this is ritual. This is sorcery. I told you then that I would not bow to any fane or acknowledge any spirit. I told you that I owned only the empirical clarity of imperial truth, and I stand by those words.
Please, Garvey,
begged Aximand.
We are doing the right thing.
Loken shook his head.
I believe we will all rue the day you brought the War Master here.